Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you going to get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
I hope he didn't kill somebody.
When we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle key popping that water bath. Y'all jacking. It's a party. It's a party. It's a party.
Welcome into 11 Personnel, episode 149. I am Nick Roush, joined by Adam Luckett. A little later in the week, but we did not want to start recording on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, and then have news of a new SEC schedule come out Friday. But after basically a week in the Florida panhandle, the league did not reach a conclusion on a new schedule, Luckett. After the way things were going entering this week, we thought maybe 9 games would happen. But Kentucky and some others pushed back enough. There's enough uncertainty for them to say, you know what? Let's just table this discussion for later. We don't need to make any wide sweeping motions right now. We can come back to the table later on.
Yeah, to me, it's really two things here. I think led by Mitch Barnhart, Kentucky, Arkansas, South Carolina, or 3 schools mentioned, and then the other teams, I guess,
State
in their region.
Was in
Mississippi
too.
State, probably Ole Miss. They want 8 games. They don't want 9. Number one, Nick, teams aren't getting any extra revenue for this because they're locked into a contract with ESPN. That contract starts, the new one, in 2024. It runs all the way to 33. So they're locked into that. So they're not going to get any extra money. And number two, the playoff. Like, the playoff's a big question mark in all of this. ACC's new proposed model is 3-5-5. Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliavkoff is on record saying he wants to go back to 8 games. And who even knows what the Big 12 is going to be?
Right, right. When they
now the Big 10's at 9, but they're about to sign a $1 billion TV deal. So they're just, so that's going to be baked into their pocketbooks.
Right.
Them playing 9 conference games. So I think what you're seeing here is the bigger boys are kind of like, well, hold on a second. We're not getting more playoff revenue. Nick Saban has long been a proponent of 9-game conference schedules. And he's even saying we need to do what the other, we need to look and do what the other conferences are doing.
His direct quote was, we'll be playing 5 top 25 teams. And that's just not us. That's everybody.
Yeah.
And we can't have a 2-loss team get left out of the playoff if the playoff isn't changed.
And then Kirby Smart came back and said, he's for what's best for the SEC, but we have to do what gives us the best opportunity to compete for national championships. That means competitive balance with the other leagues. And if the other leagues are playing just 8 conference games, I don't see the SEC playing 9. I think that's what it boils down to until the playoff figures their stuff out. Which is, they're a mess right now with everything.
I saw, did you see the thing that Dellinger had with the college football playoff guy? I think his name is, he's the Mississippi State president.
Yeah.
I forget his name, but his comments were, I think we can get it done by 2023. And I think we have 10 of 11 people who would be on board. It's like, no, hold up. That's what they said last time. And then you got to the negotiating table and the alliance dug its heels in and things went nowhere. So you might be optimistic now, but there's no reason, there's nothing tangible to say that it's going to get done by then. So I believe it was wise where you have The last year of this current playoff contract, I believe, is the first year Texas and Oklahoma are in. Is it 2025 for all that? So
they're supposed to join in 2025. And that's so, when the new playoff will come in 2026 as right. of now. 2025 would be the last year of the current contract, correct?
So you have them kind of synced up, and you have the timing. You have time, too. And that was something that Sankey was really big on during the COVID years. It's why he freaking was ready to go punch Kevin Warren in the face when the Big Ten made all of those crazy moves. He's always been about being patient. This is another case of it. But this is where we got to tip our cap to Mitch Barnhart. I remember when he was on the selection committee for basketball, looking, we're like, Mitch, pull some strings for us. This was finally that time where Mitch used up his capital as the longest tenured AD to make some waves. And even though he made some comments that made it pretty clear that Cal and Stoops don't like his stance on Nil, how he kind of drags his feet, I think Stoops will be happy that Mitch was able to help get the 8-game format some momentum to keep that alive, because nobody wants to play 9 SEC games less than Mark Stoops. That dude, yeah.
They're not hiding from it. No doubt.
He doesn't talk about big college football issues unless it's going to 9 games, and he's just, nope, I don't want to do it. Did you see how everything happened back in the COVID year? Like, I'm out on
it. Yeah. And we're going to get this here, Nick, and it's going to be pretty funny. You're going to get national media folks just ripping Barnhart for this, for preventing them from seeing a 9-game SEC schedule. People are going to be pretty irate about it. And that's going to be funny. But like you said, he picked now he's got all these chips he's accumulated, and now he's putting them on the table for this.
We're all in.
Yeah.
But and the thing that I like, the way he's negotiated it, is for he's selling it to Kentucky fans is, we need to keep the governor's cup alive. It's in jeopardy if we don't. Which, is it technically? No. I mean, we can get into that later. But
I think they would have to have a conversation.
Right.
I think they would have to seriously consider it.
But that's what he did, though, was he put that as the front, but then also played at everybody else's heartstrings. Because here's the thing. Alabama, they don't really care about Kentucky's rivalry with Louisville. The ACC ones, I don't think anybody at the SEC cares that much about those out-of-conference rival games.
Except Florida, who's Scott Strickland. He just keeps talking, right?
He wants to play everybody.
Scott Strickland sounds like they don't let him say anything in the room, so he just comes out and says everything he was thinking to the media.
Yeah.
Because he's been talking all week. He wants to play 9 conference games plus 10th, and then he wants to have another Power 5 game. I'm like, God, like, nobody else wants this. I don't know if I even truly believe you want it, but in the most Florida way possible, that's what we got from him. But yeah, I don't know. I guess we just have to figure this out. We hate it, but because everything comes down to the playoff, but this is just a perfect example of it coming down to the playoff. Like, you know, you got to figure it out. If ACC and Pac-12 are only playing 8, you know, maybe you should consider not playing 8.
Right.
Or not
right.
playing 9.
And that's where Mitch went to, is it's like, why put ourselves at, we already cannibalize each other enough. Why put that extra game on us? You know, and that's where you get people like Saban to kind of come around. So I was glad that as much as it would have been fun to start this podcast, and we've got this new format and we're ready to talk about who's playing who and all this sort of stuff, it's probably for the best that they did leave without any sort of concrete changes. The one big change they did agree upon was how they'll do the basketball scheduling format, which is, instead of playing 3 permanent home and away games, you just 2, you rotate another team each year, and then you play the rest of them. And it just kind of is a coin flip year to year.
In the tournament, everybody's in the tournament, all 16.
Yeah, yeah.
You just get more Wednesday, games on Wednesday.
Wednesday's just going to mean more.
Yeah.
Oh, here, man. Those are going to be some bad games. I guess that's kind of isn't that what the ACC does already?
Yeah, it's just one more team. The ACC is 15. But it's just one more. Right.
Notre Dame, yeah. We do need to talk a little bit more. Let's get into the discussion that's happened previous times throughout summer radio, but this time actually feels like the biggest excuse reason not to play the Governor's Cup if the conference ultimately decides to go to nine. Currently, Kentucky and Louisville are locked in to play through 2030. But as it happened in the COVID year, if the conference changes their scheduling format, you can get out of that contract.
Or if bowl eligibility requirements change.
Right, from 6 to 5 or, you know, whatever it may be. Or 6 to 7 if there's less bowl games, which, I mean, that ain't happening. But, Luckett, in your mind, I know you live amongst – you live amongst the filth like me here in Louisville. You enjoy watching those dirty birds cry as much as anybody, but could you see the move to nine ultimately ending the Governor's Cup?
Yeah, I think it's been shown in recent conference realignment that stuff happens. Texas A&M, Pittsburgh, West Virginia, whenever there's a big conference move like that, rivalries have died. Bigger rivalries in Kentucky-Louisville in football have died. I think it's on the table. I mean, I 100% think it's on the table.
Kansas, Missouri in basketball, that was a big one that went away.
Even in football, that's kind of similar a little bit, right? Yeah. Regional rivalry there. Both those fan bases hate each other. They both interact with each other in those big cities, specifically Kansas City. And that died. So I don't think it's out of whack to think that would be firmly on the table. Now, bowl requirements change, this or that, I think they would consider it. But if it's not, if you still got to get 6 to get to a bowl game and you have to play 9 SEC games, I don't know. We'll see. I think they would end the series. I really do.
So the timing aspect of it would benefit Kentucky on it's a pros and cons. So, like, on the one hand, do you really want to end a rivalry that you're just completely dominating? But on the other, you this would be the time where you don't have people saying they're just scared to play. It's like, no, our hands are kind of tied. But here's the thing, look, that Mark Story made a good point.
What about South Carolina? Okay. Right. Why would they still want to play Clemson if they're playing 9 SEC games?
They wouldn't. They shouldn't.
Would you? Do you just like losing? I mean, you know.
Well, in Mark Story's point was, if you're getting rid of some of your SEC football rivals because things are rotating more often, Louisville fills a rivalry gap. But the thing is, they wouldn't if it goes to 9.
I don't think 3-6. People would be upset, but when Alabama, Auburn, A&M, Texas, Oklahoma are rolling into town consistently,
mm-hmm.
that kind of fills that wound. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to have huge home games every year. You're going to have a brand name blue blood coming to your house. And that Texas, Oklahoma, and A&M, the first few times they come, it's going to be awesome.
It's gonna be a nut house.
And you're going to be able to go to Austin. You're going to be able to go to Norman.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be able to go to the Grove once every 4 years.
The one, I don't want to say sticking point, but I think what might make Mark Stoops, because we know that less is more. Wins matter more, and I'm with him on that aspect of it. This whole thing we got in last year ahead of the Governor's Cup where people like Locke and, you know, you have all these yokels out there. Oh, they haven't played nobody.
That makes no sense.
It doesn't matter. Wins matter more than the opponent you're playing. Does it make it more fun in the moment? Sure. But when you think back on seasons, like just look at the attendance that they've got over at the Pizza Palace, okay? That place filled up more regularly when they were beating the snot out of Conference USA teams and winning 9 games than it has when they're going 6-6 against ACC teams, against shellacked by Alabama in these season opening games. I'm with him to that extent. The one reason why I think there is a little bit of a what might make Mark Stoops slightly think twice. The momentum that they've built in that series has not only directly translated to just bigger seasons, but on the recruiting front. I mean, Louisville's gotten, what, 2 kids in the state of Kentucky in 5 years? You know, like, you can still do that without the game, But there might be a year or two where you're having to fight off some narratives that Kentucky's scared to play a Louisville or something like that.
My counter to the argument would just, you could just show the final score in a graphic.
But then, but if you take that away, though, you know what I mean? Or I guess the SEC should ultimately have that. But, you know, it's really easy to sell. It's really easy to sell with J.J. Weaver. Like, J.J. Weaver just got to throw L's down after picking off a pass when they, you know, they didn't want me, kind of thing. You know, like, that's fun to sell to those kids in the city of Louisville. So there's aspects of it. And I personally don't want this rivalry game to go away. In fact, I want it to be Labor Day again. Let's play it Sunday, Labor Day weekend.
No.
I'm all for it.
I'm against that, but.
That's because you aren't doing summer radio in Louisville.
Well, you'd be better. Just be better, Nick. Find something else to talk about. I think, listen, they've been playing since 1994, right?
30 years this next year.
Okay. In the grand scheme of things, that's a short period of time.
Dropping that.
Louisville's only been a power conference team for less than a decade.
Yeah, yeah.
2014 was first year, I believe.
Sounds right.
If you get east of Lexington, I mean, who really cares? Like, do Kentucky fans in Bowling Green, how much do they care about the rivalry? I think we are located in a region in the state where it matters a lot.
And we are online, and we're Louisville fans are very, you know.
If I drove to Corbin today and asked 100 people in Kentucky hats, would they rather play Louisville or Tennessee every year in either 100. Sport? So, I mean, like, obviously, rivalries are regional and all that. I just think they would highly consider it if it's there, because there's not, like, it's not a 100-year rivalry or anything. And I think all that stuff, you're going to have to – you got to make hard decisions. You got to do what you think is best for your football program. And if you think locking in three permanent wins or close to permanent wins in the non-con is the best thing for you, then I think you got to make the hard call.
So to support your line of thinking, the SEC would prefer to go out of their way to preserve those 100-year-old routes, the Alabamas and Tennessees and what have
you. Yeah, but you have to think, like, those are all conference rivalries, right?
Right.
I'm talking, like, this is a non-conference rivalry. Like, there's not a lot of those out there. You have South Carolina, Clemson, Florida State, Florida, Kentucky, Louisville.
Georgia, Georgia Tech. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know.
There's just not, like, if you start looking at rivalries, they're all, a lot of them are in conference.
And you would also add, too, that this is happening. Like, if we were having this conversation in 2011 or – you know, if we were having this when, 2011, Kentucky struggling, Charlie Strong, I think that was their Sugar Bowl year, that or 12. Kentucky fans would be much more like, oh, you know, if it went away, it wouldn't be the worst thing. But I will say that from standing in my shoes, this rivalry, this game means more to me than most. You know, whether it's family, it's friends, I enjoy only having to drive a mile to the stadium to go cover that game. This rivalry does mean more to me, and I would hate to see it go away. I would. The last 3 years beaten by a million points has been so much fun. I've found myself just really, really drawing the ire of them even more. Like that, when the Lynn Bowden game especially just really made me something there whenever I said that the whole team got the flu and their quarterbacks might not play. They said I was fake news, and then after they lost by a million, they said, well, he actually was right. They were sick. It's like, screw all of you jerks. Like, so I really love to beat the absolute shit out of Louisville.
Well, that's another game that Kentucky hadn't played anybody and walked into it against Louisville.
yeah, exactly. See, and that's why I love this game, because ultimately – if you don't play it, then you get this same old bull crap brought up every single year. And, you know, it becomes diarrhea eventually of just bull crap that you hear from Louisville fans. So I want this game to be around. It should be around just because I say so. with no other, it's one of those like it that even if you make solid points as to why it shouldn't be played, I still think it should be played just because I want to see Kentucky and Louisville play football every year. That's just how I feel, you know?
It's just
– and that's how a lot of – and that's what makes college football great, is because we do have these rivalries that make people go crazy. And that's an unfortunate – it's the most unfortunate side effect of realignment. Well, the positives, we get to go watch a game in Austin and play those kind of teams regularly. The negative is what you're is this right here.
It's a new world.
A new world we're entering.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't know. Like, this is all speculation right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, especially after no decisions were reached.
Doesn't even know what they're going to do. So, we'll just have to let the cake bake here. But, like I said, it's going to be on the table whenever, because they're eventually going to 9. They might go to 8 in the short term, but that thing's getting kicked up to 9 eventually.
Right.
And Kentucky's going to have to decide if it's worth it. Now, if bowl eligibility changes and you can get there with 5-7, then you should play the game. That would be my opinion. But winning is more important than scoring points in a non-conference schedule. Winning year over year builds prestige, builds a track record, which helps you raise your ceiling. So that's why, you know, like what you got, smart scheduling is very important in college football. It's why Louisville this year, Nick, I'm going to be pretty high on Louisville. They could have a top 35 team and go 6-6, 5-7. they're playing a dumb schedule. They're going to UCF. They're playing one of the best FCS teams at home. Why are you going to UCF the same year you're going to Kentucky? Road trip. Why are you making two non-conference road trips, true road trips?
Is it JMU? It's JMU that's coming, right?
Yeah.
And I believe it's their last FCS season too.
They're like into the weird transition year. Like, I think they're in the Sun Belt, but they're not in the Sun Belt kind of thing. So they can't go – I don't think they can go to FCS playoffs, but they can't win the –
And they can't go to bowl games either or something too, probably.
Yeah, it's some weird transition year. But, yeah, they're going to be a full-fledged Sun Belt member here soon.
Freaking gosh.
And, like, I think Kentucky has benefited. Like, part of the rise has been the non-conference schedule. They've scheduled smart.
Mm-hmm.
They've beaten Louisville. You look up, and they're 9-3.
The whole – it's just it's so funny to me because and you only hear it really from the other side, but it's so funny to nitpick the schedule when we break down games. We talk about, well, this year the conference schedule is really looking in UK's favor, you know? Like, it's
– you never know. Like, last year we thought it wasn't, and it ended up – being a pretty manageable slate.
Oh man, I'm excited. We're gonna.
Some people wanted to tell me Kentucky didn't play anybody.
Remember what was Florida was ranked 10th after they played Alabama closer than anybody all season last year. It's just the fact that the fact that all of the teams kind of went down the crapper after Kentucky beat them. That's what it is. Mark Stoops is just a grim reaper. And folks just won't accept
it. It's like that the meme, the internet meme with the grim reaper walking door to door.
That was great. Yeah, I think that was a Jack Pilgrim special with the Coach O.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to get Coach O's book with Bruce Feldman about turning around programs, it's for $1.88 on Amazon right now.
Did not age well. Did not age. Hope they got that early return on investment there.
One thing I did want to mention from the spring meetings too, we didn't get any more – Jimbo and Saban are all playing nice now. I did think that the seat chart they had there was just absolutely wonderful content, though.
Yes.
with Jimbo in between two SEC officials. You had the nerd corner where it was like Kiffin in between Drinkwitz and
It was all – I don't know if you noticed it, Nick. It was alphabetical order except Jimbo. They moved him out of alphabetical order. So everything else was – everybody was in alphabetical order. And they stuck Jimbo in between all the admins. Chuck Dunlap had to keep an eye on him. Who's like the SEC media rep. Like, that's who we talked to get.
Yeah, yeah, he's the media relations guy. But I'm forgetting – it was Drinkwitz, Kiffin, and who would be
– Leach.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Just like weird corner of the table there. And it's going to take me so long to get used to seeing Brian Kelly at LSU. even when we see him on the sideline, it's going to be like, ugh. You know, it just that purple. I don't know.
We'll get that. He's going to get the red face, and we're not going to know if he's mad or if he's just sunburned down there in Louisiana.
Seriously. That game of new faces and new places in football and basketball this year, it's as crazy as it's ever been.
Yeah. Football, there are a lot of people move.
And Thad Modder.
Like I think there's going to be a lot of people week one and be like, he's coaching there?
Yeah.
Who's their coach again?
Mario Cristobal of Miami's one that just sneaks up on you because you don't think about them a lot. But that one's going to be a big one.
Like, you got to think all the brands that got new coaches, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, USC, LSU.
Oh, man. We're less than 100 days away, I think, down Miami. To 92.
92 to Kentucky kickoff on Friday, June 3rd.
Which, oh, man. A weekend of these countdown posts and whew.
There's some numbers out, finicky numbers out there. Like when you get to 49 and 47, have you figured out what you're going to do?
Yeah. I don't know. Cause like I can get you a paragraph or two on Khalil Saunders and then a paragraph or two on Phil Hoskins or something, but man, some of these. Yeah.
Yeah. I had 97 and that
Slim Pickens.
I was going through stats just trying to add up stuff that equaled 97. Like, please give me a 97.
I've started digging through the every year, every day I go back through the Ring of Honor to see if numbers are on it. Art Still could have been one for 97.
I didn't even think about
that. Yeah, that was a
miss on my part.
It's hard for the older numbers. We really need a Corey Price to start a website like John Scott did. For basketball, just so we can have the players by numbers to make this thing easier.
Yeah, that would work.
It's easy in basketball. It's a little bit more difficult than football. Which, speaking of, football kicks back into gear this weekend. Kentucky's camps. Everything's back on. We've got official visitors. Anthony Brown, the 4-star wideout from Ohio, Springfield, Ohio, is going to be the first official visitor of this recruiting calendar year for the Cats. And man, I didn't realize his accolades like it. Of all the Springfield kids they've recruited, he's got to be the best, right?
Seems like it.
I mean, he's a little bit shorter guy, 5'9", but crazy fast. Helped them get to the Division I state title game last year, which Division I is the 6A equivalent, Kentucky, Ohio's largest class. And I mentioned the Springfield kids because they're coached by former Wildcat Mo Douglas. His kid Moses went to UK, transferred. Isaiah Gibson went to UK, transferred. Cordell Looney was a 5-year guy who ended up getting the rotation, playing quite a bit as a junior, senior. But UK's recruited there often, and now this might be the biggest fish yet. He's officially visiting over the weekend. And, this looks like it could be another race between the Cats and Cincinnati.
Yeah, he's got a UC official next weekend. So it's down to two. Former Minnesota commit here. I believe he decommitted in February. With Brown, I think he's true slot receiver. That's where you're going to plug and play him at. We've seen like long speed be a big trait that the staff goes after. I'm not sure he has that. So that's a question mark I would throw out there. But when you watch him play, really good ball skills. He does a great job of tracking the ball. He gets open. He's running by guys. So maybe it's a case where maybe he plays a little faster than his recorded speed. So for me, it's going to be like, what would be his, like a legit speed testing numbers for him? And if those checked out, he checks a ton of boxes for you. Not the biggest dude in the world, I believe. On three has him listed 5'8", 160. His personal huddle is 5'10", 170. So let's call it fair, somewhere in the middle, 5'9", 165. That's little, but you know, if you've got the quick footed, short area burst where you can get open, that's intriguing as a slot guy. And he makes a lot of catches over the middle. If you watch his junior tape, so that's something you have to do as a slot receiver. So that's intriguing. So there's a lot to like there. I think they really like him. I think if they let us in the door and we got to see their priority big board of who's up on the list, I would say he's near the top along with Christian Conyer, who's also coming to Lexington for an official visit this weekend.
Yeah, Conyer, the cornerback from South Warren down in Bowling Green, unofficially visited Tennessee last weekend. He's unofficially visiting UK this weekend.
And Tennessee had their huge unofficial like visit. They called it Volpalooza, so they get a bunch of guys they think they're going to get committed here over the summer. They get them all together, and then they're going to try to spit out a bunch of commitments here over the next month and a half.
Kentucky's going to get the first official for Conyer in 2 weeks, and then I think the following week he'll be at Tennessee. And I know he has certainly been at the top of UK's big board for cornerbacks as long as they've been recruiting him. So a position that Kentucky's whiffed on a decent amount as of late. This is one you've recruited the state well, especially in these battles with Tennessee, with Octavius Oxendine. You've won some in the state of Tennessee. This is a big one, big fish you need to keep home.
Yeah, June 17th, official to UK. June 24th, official to Tennessee. Two-horse race. It's one you would like to win to get him in there. He's got some size there at the secondary position I think that you're going to like. Two-way player in high school. I think there's a lot to like about him. It seems like Kentucky really, really likes him. That getting any type of recruiting win over Tennessee is significant. So that would be big. And that's another one. I think Brown and him both are going to be summer decisions. And usually when you're hosting these summer officials, usually what Kentucky's trying to do is they're trying to get summer officials in for guys that are probably about to announce in July or whatever, so they can get them committed. Now, when you're seeing some other schools, like Oklahoma's hosting 25 guys on official visits this weekend. They're probably not going to get commitments for maybe 1, 2, 3 of those guys, but they're trying to build up buzz under Venables. Clemson's hosting official visits for 30 players this weekend. This is the first time Dabo's only done officials in the summer. So I think they're just trying to make it kind of a big thing to get a bunch of buzz.
Mm-hmm.
But usually the summer is not as efficient, I would say, as the fall officials.
Right.
So you got to pick your prospects, who you want. You keep it a little small, like Kentucky, keep it smaller, intimate, so you can give them a ton of attention and then try to get a commitment. I think there's a reason Anthony Brown's the only official this weekend. I think he's getting the full court press.
Mm-hmm.
And then plus with Conyer here on an unofficial, I think that's kind of a double team. Hope they hit it off, and then maybe you can record a big win with both of them.
Pretty crazy for Clemson to – I mean, if you like all 30 kids and you're just doing them all at once, it feels like a waste, you know?
I think it's more of just the look at what we can pull off, get guys together with your coaches and see if you all can hit it off of any type of thing.
It's also one of those things too, where Dabo has got to, he's got to try new gimmicks every once in a while. This is how he rolls.
Clemson used to try to do, they called it like the Tiger Cookout or something. And they would try to get what they thought would be their whole class and then their biggest prospects all together for a weekend in Clemson. And that would be kind of their official, like, this is our group. So I think they're trying something. They're just doing that a lot earlier here, but they're doing it with officials, I think. It's just just an example of how other people are operating. But for Kentucky, I think it's very much a need-based. Like, we're not going out of our way to host guys. We're going after guys we think we can get committed here over the summer. And then when the season comes, save those officials for some of your later prospects. Obviously, those are going to be the better officials because you get the game atmosphere. In school and all that. Where you're coming to campus now, there's nothing on, like, campus is dead.
Right. Speaking of visitors, Thursday was a funny day on Twitter because Kobe Keenum is a top 500 guy, offensive lineman?
Right out, top 500.
Around there.
600, yeah.
He is – as good as Louisville's done in recruiting, they still can't get a lineman to block for him, which is kind of important. But they're all in on this guy, this Kobe Keenum kid. And he switched his official visit dates around. And The funny part about it was the guy who runs Louisville's rival site, Ty Spalding. He's new to the game, Luckett. He's new to the game. He showed it. He showed it, too, because he moved it to keep this as clear as possible. He was going to go to Louisville June 10th, and instead he decided to go to Louisville June 17th for their big weekend. And this rivals guy, Louisville eats first. They're getting him on the big weekend. Well, he also moved it back so he could go to Kentucky first. Which Keenum ended up seeing all of that stuff.
I think if Ty could say it again, he would use a different choice of words there.
I think so too.
But Louisville is – we can get into Louisville here too. But they're having their huge recruiting weekend on the 17th. That's when they're doing all their officials. Pierce Clarkson's coming for his official, which I find if I had a guy like that that was like the big fish, I would think maybe you wanted to save it for the fall.
Yeah, yeah. You unofficial him until you have to. Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, they're doing a huge blast off for their official. All their commitments are coming. They're bringing in a few other big fish, a couple like top 150 prospects.
That Reuben Owens kid, I think he's
Reuben Owens, Madden Sanker, who's a top 150
offensive
lineman from Georgia. Javen Simmons, who's a 4-star running back from Florida. That's going to be kind of their big weekend, and Keenum moved that back so he could go to that.
Well, and also he moved it to go to Kentucky's kind of side, because I believe the 10th through the 12th will be the most you'll get from Kentucky official visitors in a weekend. I mean, it's still five.
Yeah, they have. So. To me, they got what I have logged so far. They have Shamar Porter booked. They have Ty Bryant booked. They have Kobe Keenum booked. And Danny O'Neill, 2024 quarterback, is supposed to camp that weekend, that same weekend. So, right, that's going to be a big recruiting weekend there in Lexington. And you're putting him in there with two guys who are committed. And also, this is like Drake Jackson jumping into the fire here. He was tagged in Keenum's announcement. So he's helping out there. Zach Ginzer trying to record maybe his first big win, recruiting win, and getting a head-to-head victory over Louisville. Be good. He's from Alabama. I believe that's North Alabama. It's kind of the same stomping grounds as Logan Stenberg.
Summerall used to recruit a lot.
Bunchy Stallings, I believe, is from that region. Yeah, it's the Summerall connection, right? So there's a lot there. So if they can – and obviously Yenzer got connections in Alabama.
Right.
Went to Troy.
From his time at Troy,
his family moved down – he either moved there or Georgia.
It was Georgia. Okay. Was where he spent his high school years.
So, yeah, nice little battle here we could be having for Kobe Keenum.
And it's just fun because – just to see his reaction to all the social media stuff. Because you know how kids are. They're like, who wants it more? And then you get, bunch of kids. Yeah. Smart on his part, really, really up in that follower base. Going to help that on 3-0 valuation.
But we need to dig into Louisville here a little bit. I wrote about them this week, Nick. We found something interesting on Steve Clarkson's Wikipedia page. And I want to start this off by saying Bruce Feldman wrote a book called making of the modern day quarterbacks. And he followed mainly three guys in here who were all kind of private quarterback trainers. The other one was Trent Dilfer, who took over Elite 11 at this time. And they've all still like are involved in the quarterback space. Like George Whitfield was famous for training Johnny Manziel.
He did ESPN hits for a while.
And that year was the year after Johnny won the Heisman. So the third of the book is just Johnny going through the whole circuit. And it's a circus. Like you should read the book just for that. Because Feldman gets into the accents. Another guy involved in it is Steve Clarkson. Runs a big quarterback at California. Kind of got famous for trained Matt Leinart, Matt Barkley. They talk about him and Matt Barkley a lot in that book. I mean, he's just like this big private quarterback trainer in Los Angeles. He runs an organization called Dreammaker. He makes people pay thousands of dollars for them to train their kid who's a quarterback.
I mean, it drew so much attention. Morley Safer did a profile on it for 60 Minutes.
And Yes, you can find that 60-minute profile, I believe, on YouTube.
It's crazy.
And in that, he says, I believe, that he didn't want his son playing football or this or that. They kind of pressed him on that. But that's not it. That's not even important. So Pierce Clark says playing. Dreammaker is sponsored by Adidas. You go to dreammaker.com, Adidas logo is on the page. So he is getting paid by Adidas.
I mean, it's a case of following the money. It's pretty clear. And the thing is this time you can't get in trouble for it. And even more so, California is one of a few states where high school kids can get no money. And that's the part of this too, Luckett, is like, you know, we don't want to be the guys over here just trying to be whistleblowers or anything like that. It's just annoying that Louisville people aren't talking about it. When they talk about Scott Satterfield's recruiting renaissance, they don't even know. They don't know who to give credit to because they refuse to just acknowledge that they got Adidas finally scratching their backs up.
We need to call it what it is. This is genius by Scott Satterfield.
It's the smartest thing he's ever done.
NIL is here. Let the middleman handle it. You just go over there and you coach. And then you just bring the players here. And like, you go win PR victories for me on the side. Let me coach the team and try to win some games this year. And so now you're getting where they're having all this momentum. They're building up. All these kids are coming at the same time, like we said in June. And as long as Pierce Clarkson's in this class, they're going to get a lot of these guys. Now, long term, I don't think recruiting California is going to be an efficient strategy for the University of Louisville. But if you can get one big bump in this class and you can give Satterfield a little bit more runway here as the head coach, I think it's a good move for them. Now,
the sustainability aspect of it's a big part, which I appreciate. Like, you're right. It's genius on his part, especially in a very big year for him where he's kind of been toeing that line with that fan base for a while.
Where we were in January. He was going on local radio. Josh Hurd had to go and take a stand for him. They brought him back, and he went on local radio to defend himself. Now they're just getting PR wins, and like Louisville fans are getting chirpy with Kentucky fans online. They're back.
But here's the thing though, like it's work. It's a very much a short term thing, and it can work long term if you win. That's a big if.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those do like?
How
interested is A&M going to get in some of these Adidas guys whenever the rubber meets the road? You know.
Yeah, I mean, DeAndre Moore's a top 100 prospect in LA. He goes to the same high school as Malachi Nelson, I believe. USC is going to make a run at him.
Right.
Can you hold on to him? Is that Clarkson connection strong enough? Now, we got another news.
Yeah, this was good.
This week. Aaron Williams, he's a top 150 cornerback who's committed to Louisville. He's at another high school. He's transferring to St. John Bosco. Who's St. John Bosco's quarterback? Pierce Clarkson. And Pierce Clarkson also plays there with Jaleel McClain, who's another commitment for Louisville, who's a top 500, I believe, like all-purpose back or slot receiver.
It's pretty like, you know, that Steve Clarkson's doing his job well when he's even getting the transfers in the high school level to move and shake around. I just can't imagine living this kind of lifestyle. It sounds exhausting.
And Nick, Jermaine Lowell, who was a big transfer portal win for Louisville.
Arizona State. The kid from Arizona?
It's from Southern California.
Huh.
Long Beach Poly.
Interesting. Interesting how that works. It's fun to connect the dots. I like it. I'm glad. You know what? Somebody's got to, damn it.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're in the Wild West, right? I mean, I'm not saying Lowell's cheating and they should be in trouble or anything, but
they knew
what they were doing, and it's working so far. Now, we'll see long-term if it works, but I think in the short term, I think it was a really good idea for Satterfield if they can win some games. Just keep Pierce Clarkson in the fold. I think they're going to be fine. They're going to lose some kids, I would assume. Like, that receiver, he's going to be very, very hard to hang on to, I would think. But I don't know what Louisville's NIL is set up like. Are these, you know, how much money are they dishing out? How much are these kids getting? Mm-hmm. How big is that fund? Can they add a bunch more? Are they just loading up on the front end? But they got a ton of momentum right now. They're getting national buzz, recruiting buzz. Steve Wolfong just wrote a big post about them with Satterfield, gave him a bunch of quotes. And they're on pace for a top 20. Like right now, their average star rating is top. I mean, it would have finished tied 10th with Texas last year if the class ended today. So that's kind of where they're at. I mean, it's a very, very high caliber. This was a team that never recruited at a top 40 level under Satterfield.
Right.
I mean, quite the change has been switched. So we'll see. But I think it's, you know, short term, it's a great idea. And for Clarkson, I think there's a reason he's going to Louisville, right? I mean, Cunningham's out. He's going to be the clear guy next year when he steps on campus to start. And so if he can come and bring some guys with him who might be able to play early, I think that's why they're doing it.
So, like it, on an unrelated note, I've got to bring up something very important that's just crossed the Twitter sphere of mine. I know we're both big Roosters guys. You're a big Bud Light guy. But what if I could offer you a Mountain Dew Long Island iced tea from Buffalo Wild Wings? Does that sound like it'd float your boat?
Intriguing. I saw those. They caught my eye a time or two. Like, what is this? What is this mess of a liquid? What are we doing here?
This is motor oil on ice. The thing is, though, is LITs.
When it's you 89 watch them, unleaded.
When you watch a bartender make an LIT, you're sitting there thinking to yourself, how is this going to taste good? That's just a bunch of garbage.
LITs were a go-to in the younger days.
Oh, go man.
Out, get a few LITs.
Ooh, can I tell you a fun bowl game story that I don't think my brother will mind me sharing now?
Shoot.
So he was the walk-on who got to dress for home games, but didn't – I don't think he always traveled. I don't think he was on the travel squad as a true freshman. When you go to a bowl game, everybody gets to go. Right. First year, he gets to go to the Bahamas. Pretty kick-ass bowl, right? Well, the first night he's there, they really only have one practice there that's hard. It's the next day. But that's basically the only thing he has to do all week. He decides to go out with the offensive lineman and drink off of the –
That's his first mistake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But they decide to go off the resort because, you know, Atlantis is pricey. Let's go get something cheaper. So he's trying to keep up with his guys, and they're drinking the Senior Frogs version of the LITs. Yes.
I've heard about those.
Oh, yeah. And, well, I think one of them's good. Two, and you're over the moon. Three, well, he ended up underneath the blackjack table back at Atlantis. He at least made it back to Atlantis. They had to carry him. The cheerleaders had to carry him back to his room. And the next morning at practice, mind you, this is the first ever Bahamas Bowl. Logistics are not exactly worked out. You can't drink the Bahamian water. You get sick.
Oh, yeah.
So I had this practice in 90-degree weather. He just smells like booze. And the whole team's like, God, Ralph, come on. Get yourself together. And he just is just puking, can't keep it together. They don't get water for almost an hour up till practice. And when he did, he just is like, there's never been better tasting water in my life. So it was a proud big brother moment, because if I'm the walk-on of the football team going to the Bahamas for a bowl game, I'm getting too drunk to I'm doing the same exact thing.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a hangover experience most would want to go through.
Lesson learned, LITs. Stay away, especially yes. Mountain Dew LITs.
You're over 23, 24. You don't need to be drinking LITs.
That's a young man's drink.
Yeah, that's a young man's game.
Oh, man. Which, by the way, I'm doing a bachelor party this weekend. It's just in town, but God, I'm going to be doing that and then going to the Kroger Field on Sunday. So I got to.
It's wedding season.
I got to. I hate how much I've got to like tell myself to pump the brakes. It's once I hit 30, the Sundays. And it's less about like a headache or anything. It's just like, I just wanted to do nothing. I just want to sit in like cold and do nothing, which is why I did that PGA Sunday. That was glorious. But man, did I getting old.
No fun.
Yeah. No fun. I don't know if we have any more football related topics on the docket. I mean, there's nothing's come out on Chris Rodriguez, but it's that. Nothing sounds good. So
yeah, still playing the waiting game there.
Yeah, we can just leave it at that for now. We're going to let the cake bake there as well. But I'll be at the football camp on Sunday. So keep it locked on the KSR Instagram and Facebook stories. I'll have some clips there.
One thing I will say about Chris, like if he's going to be ineligible this year for whatever reason, he needs to just go to the supplemental draft, which is over the summer. And I think he would have to enter his name in that over the summer. So that might be something that has to happen here soon. So that might be something we need to look into.
Could be, I hate to say it, but we could have ourselves a Jeremy Jarman situation on our hands, where you have these big dreams for big season and then one of your best players gets taken away. A little bit different with a rusher of Chris's caliber, but if you look at the UK record book, Jarman, he wasn't going to break the Oliver Barnett record, but he was going to come close to it. Same thing with tackles for loss. I mean, he was right up there until he had the GNC supplement get him to fail a drug test, and he had to hop into the supplemental draft. That was just a real damn shame.
Yeah, it was that was unfortunate. Now, I'm looking here, Nick. I don't even know if the NFL even does this anymore. I can't find anything, and they didn't have one in 2021.
That might have been a thing that COVID got rid of.
Yeah, so maybe that's not even an option. Maybe he has to wait out.
Could he just enter draft as a free agent?
I would assume so. He could.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that would be better for him or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Man, I mean, he's already graduated school.
Right, right. So, I mean, maybe he was there 4 years.
So, but I mean,
either way,
he didn't need to stick around if he's not going to be able to play, would be my kind of – what's what I'm getting at here. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. So, then maybe – so, disregard that I said that. No supplemental draft, but that would have been an option, I guess, 5 years ago, but it doesn't look like that's a thing anymore.
I'm also seeing a clip that you're going to see quite a bit. A guy for Wake Forest just in center field got tagged with a ball right off the top of his head in a regional game.
Underrated sporting event over the next 3 weekends, man, baseball tournament.
And it just pisses me off because it was fun following along with the UK team last weekend.
Yeah. I mean, if they could ever get good, that'd be fun. Well, for us, easy summer content. And it'd be something to look forward to watch on the weekends.
When we talk next week, is Nick Mangione still going to be the coach?
Yeah, I was wondering, like, I guess because they had all that meetings this week, all that the end of the year conversation probably had to be pushed back.
Right. That's what I was thought. Because, like, it was Selection Monday was at 3 o'clock or something, Memorial Day. Mitch is probably already down in Florida by then. Because
I didn't hear anything about Thursday, and I was like, I guess he's back. But then I realized, oh, like, everybody's down in Destin right now, so can't really have anything. I don't know. I could see that going either way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a beautiful weekend in the Bluegrass. We got state baseball tournament happening at Kentucky Proud Park. My DeSales Colts got blew a lead to Freddie's Woodford County. But your St. X Tigers, they're alive right now.
They're playing as we speak, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, against Christian County. So we'll see. But, hey, enjoy this beautiful weather. It's going to be a great one. Have a happy weekend, and we'll be back to talk to you next week on 11 Personnel.